Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski are back with you. Sorry about the fact there's a little bit of time between these two, but these preseason schedules, they throw things off. We're all out of whack, but finally get this game behind you now. We can go into our Projecting the 53-Man Roster podcast. Jim, how are you?
Good, good. I'm less angry than usual.
Less angry.
Yeah.
You know what? And I'm more angry than usual. This is how we're the ultimate team. It does seem like wherever one person goes higher, the other one goes lower, we always end up at net zero.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe today it should be what's making me mad.
I don't know if we have enough time for that.
We don't, because lots of things are making me mad. Today's one of those days where I'm not normally a mad guy. Normally I'm a pretty lighthearted guy.
Yeah.
But today, there's just a lot of things. We're under a lot of stress. You know, we are. We got a lot going on. Of course, our special section previewing the year is going to be coming up here very soon. So keep an eye for that. It's going to hit newsstands on Thursday, September the 8th. But we're getting all that stuff together. Lots of special behind-the-scenes content for you guys, so keep an eye out for that. But we're trying to put it all together now. There's a lot of stress. We've got the game happening. We've got cuts happening. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. So anyway, what we're going to do for you today, we're basically going to run through the 53-man roster, where it's at, cuts that have been made, and what we think is going to happen when the final cut down to 53 occurs on Saturday. By Saturday, 4 p.m. is when the final cut has to happen, and we will have the roster, the temporary roster the 2016 Bengals. Because, you know, they're going to cut this down, but then there's moving parts after that when you start talking about having to have guys pulled through that are on injured reserve, but you want to keep it open for them to come back. So we'll get into all of that here in a little bit. Want to thank the folks at Audio Boom that have been fantastic. Can you continue to be thankful that they're on board with us now? And if you had any problems with the downloading of the podcast, it appears that we have worked through it.
Yeah,
I say very nervously. but if you do have a problem where it still is not downloading for you, all you need to do, go to the Audio Boom player on our site, whether you're on our mobile site, on our app, or just go to the desktop, whatever it is. Click the subscribe button on the player, and it will immediately subscribe you to the fresh connected feed. So if your old feed is still screwing up, just click the subscribe button, and boom, we're there. No issues. Everything is all good. But again, thanks to them. It's been great to have them. We've got big ideas. We're popular internationally, we found out. Audio Boom's got all these analytics kind of giving us breakdown of what countries. The Swedes love us.
The Swedes do.
The Swedes love the BBP. Which has prompted, I think, there's something being floated out there. I think it's going to happen. I think we're going to have the Swedish shout-out, the Swedish Minute working title.
Yeah.
Very soon.
60 seconds of Swedes.
Where we get you 60 seconds of Swedes. Where we are here for our Swedish listeners, shouting out to them with maybe a little, maybe some Swedish chatter of our own.
Yeah.
So we're here for you, Swedes. Thank you for listening. I had no idea how popular we were over there. Over 100 listens from the Swedes.
Yeah.
So anyway, we've got all that going on. BTS, we had our first one at Hofbräu Haus last week, which is fantastic. Had Marcus Hunt on. He will be a topic later. But the big news was, of course, September 6th. which is the Tuesday before the first game of the season. Andy Dalton is going to be our guest. BTS at the Hofbra House in Newport. You will not want to miss this one. I'm telling you, the amount of smack talk happening with Andy Dalton. There's the Papa Shot is going to be there. He's a proud Papa Shotter.
Yeah.
And right. has one in his basement. And so you know who else has a Papa Shot in their basement is Xavier coach Chris Mack. So there was some smack talk that happened between the two of them, and now Chris Mack is also going to be there, and there's going to be a Papa Shot one-on-one extravaganza at the Hofbra House. And, of course, the standard autographs, interviews, all that type of stuff that we're going to be doing while we're up there, so you are not going to want to miss that. It is going to be quite a celebration underneath Sir Ludwig II.
Right, and when we did the Andy Dalton story in the summer, but I don't know if people really realize, like, this will be a great opportunity if you're a Bengals fan who hasn't seen, like, literally Andy up close, but how, he is funny, believe it or not. He does like to talk trash, believe it or not, and I think all of that will be seen, you know, literally up close, within 10, 20 feet of where you're at. So it's definitely got the Hofbra House.
Yeah.
September 6th. You don't want to miss it.
The new setup at Hofbra is great because you have all the tables surrounding the stage. Everybody has a good view. Everybody can hear it. It's not as packed and sort of off to the side like we were in our last spot that will remain unnamed, even though everyone knows where we were. It's a great spot. We're really happy to be down there. So come September 6th, 7 o'clock, BTS, Andy Dalton, Chris Mack. Going to be a big show. You're going to want to get there early, eat some schnitzel. It's all good stuff. All right, so let's get to the 53-man roster. So we had a bunch of cuts to get the team down to 75. The most notable one is one that has been talked about amongst Bengals fans, particularly the angry sect of Bengals fans for a long time, and that was Brandon Tate was released. Brandon's been here since 2011. He was a guy that was snatched up after final cuts from New England then.
Yeah.
And it seemed every year it was Brandon Tate was in the mix. And every year the conversation was put out there saying, hey, if anybody can come beat this guy, go for it. But no one could.
Right.
No matter who the Bengals brought in, no one could come out and be more reliable or consistent or even really much of a better receiver than what Brandon Tate was offering, even though Brandon never really was able to lift his game as a receiver to crack that rotation. They just couldn't until Alex Erickson showed up.
Yeah.
And Alex Erickson, it's unbelievable. I mean, he's returned four punts. His shortest punt return is 19 yards.
Yeah.
The longest punt return last year in 27 attempts for Brandon Tate, longest, was 18.
Yeah.
He's all four times he's gone over, including an 80-yard return.
Right.
A 39-yard guy the other night. I mean, a 40-yarder as well. It's every game he's been in. He's got a knack. He's clearly got a knack for it. And he has two touchdowns at receiver. He seems to be pretty trustworthy with some upside out of the slot. That's what they've been waiting for.
Yeah, and Darren Simmons, he said, look, we won a lot of games with Brandon Tate on the roster, but at one point, Alex Erickson was Brandon Tate. Like, Brandon Tate was 21 years old, 22 years old. They thought he had, you know, whatever potential. And Darren basically said at some point you have to find that next person. And, Alex Erickson, at least through three games, Darren Simmons just flat out said he earned the spot. Brandon didn't lose it. Alex Erickson beat him out. And what have we been saying, Paul, since we started the BBPs? Brandon Tate, they would make this move. Somebody just had to take it from him.
Yes.
And in their opinion, through three preseason games and training camp practice, all that stuff, Alex Erickson did that.
Yeah, he really did. And, I remember watching OTAs, and he made a play down the sideline. It was during minicamp, right before they went away, and saying, like, wow, that was a really nice play, and kind of the first time you really started to notice him, even as his receiver. And he's been impossible to not notice ever since then, whether it was in practice or in games. I mean, he's just one of those guys that does seem to have a bit of a knack for it. So Tate goes, It may not. I know there's a lot of people sad. This could be the end of the hashtag year of the tater, which I think because everyone was hating and he kept kind of making some. He played all right.
He was around.
Playing okay. And so every time trying to get year of the tater going. So it looks like it's not going to be. However, I'm not giving up completely. It is not out of the realm of possibility. And Marvin Lewis even alluded to this during his Tuesday press conference this week. Tate could be back. I mean,
he's not even gone. You're bringing him back.
He's not even gone, and he's still in the mix. Well, let's be honest.
Still in the mix.
but he is, isn't right. he? Because
he is.
If another team doesn't pick him up, or if another team does pick him up and then cuts him, or he finds himself a free agent again, and Alex Erickson struggles, or they have an injury, and they want to bring somebody back, Tate would be their first call.
Right.
I mean, if something happened, he would be one of their first calls to bring him back. So it's not complete. I'm not giving up on Year of the Tater just yet as far as a possibility, but yeah, it does appear that the team has moved on, and outside of him getting a call back or some injuries hit, it looks like his 5-year stint with the Bengals could be over. On the flip side, when everyone says, a lot of people talking about how tough it is to see a professional and really a really well-liked guy in the locker room like Brandon Tateo, a lot of excitement over what Alex Erickson can do. Tyler Boyd also will be part of that mix as a punt returner, possibly. Rex Burkhead will be in the mix as a kick returner, along with Erickson.
Right.
So I would, and then obviously Adam Jones. Everybody knows he'll be a part of their plans as well. So we'll start at receiver since that's really been the one that everyone is the most interested in this whole camp. To me, that's six.
Yeah,
I think you got your six.
Yeah, that was, and we've talked about it. That was the end of the room. It was Brandon Tate, when this all started, Alex Erickson or Mario Alford. And Mario Alford was waived injured. They expect him to go unclaimed on waivers and be able to come back, and get healthy. Alex Erickson's number six. And that just sort of solidifies Cody Core, James Wright. A lot to prove for those guys. I don't think there's any surprise there. I think, when all this started, Paul, Jake Kumerow was in that mix, I think, at the very beginning. And then he got hurt. And, it's kind
of
like
faded to the back of the room.
One of those things where I think very little special teams value with Jake. They worked him out. He wasn't a kick returner. He wasn't really a gunner like Cody Core and James Wright can be. And when you're undrafted, you have to be healthy. And what do you say, Paul? You can't make the club in the tub.
Can't make the club in the tub.
And that's not to say Jake Kumerow isn't another possibility for a second year on the practice squad, but. The six kind of, or seven, I guess you'd say, differentiated themselves, and it was kind of come down to special teams.
So, and I think if you're talking about the 46, so let's talk about who's actually going to play. I think James Wright is going to be inactive. I think Cody Core, I think your five on game day will be Green, LaFell, Boyd, Core, Erickson.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd actually go the other way, and I think Darren Simmons would rather have James Wright to start.
I said this last time. I have not seen that return to full health from James Wright.
Yeah.
Look at the explosion we saw from Cody Core on that 53-yard reception from A.J. McKinnon.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do. Well, to me, I think that call, Paul, comes to Darren. Because that receiver isn't going to be asked to catch passes. He's going to be asked to cover kicks. And with the loss of Cedric Pierman, even more so. And Darren Simmons said this. He's like, Cody Core is sort of working himself into that role, whereas that's what all James Wright did at LSU. One of the reasons he was drafted. I think there might be a trust factor with James. I don't know. I mean, we've got a week to see. Maybe Cody Core can do something on Thursday that tilts the balance. But that's nitpicking, I guess. I think on the 40s, I think that would be the if Core's down and Wright's up, I think that's the reason why.
Well, we'll find out because, the difference is where do they – if you have a 80% James Wright
that's a good point.
Cody
Core. Yeah.
Now, I mean, obviously Darren's been pretty happy with what he's seen from James Wright, but, you just want to see that full health. So that will be a decision that we'll learn when they go to New York for the first time and we find out where they feel that is. So then practice squad – You know, you never really know with practice squad where they're going to go.
Right.
I would think Kumaro would get back on the practice squad. Alonzo Russ, I think, because the only three left then are Kumaro, Alonzo Russell, and Rashawn Simonise.
Right.
Alonzo Russell has the build. He has right. the look. Rashawn Simonise is tall. You talk about raw needing yeah. a year on a practice squad. Right. I mean, but he is extremely raw.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what happens there, but it's honestly, I thought that was actually a pretty big accomplishment for Rashawn to Simonise to even make it past the 75.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see a lot of those three mm-hmm. on Thursday night in Indianapolis, and you're right, you know, practice squad, you have to refresh my memory. Can they add a few more guys in 2017?
They can add two extra of the two-year guys.
Okay.
So they can have four of the extra year guys, and they can, as many as four. And then there's this other six.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see, especially this Pyramid injury, and what do they do with Trey Carson and Bronson Hill. And,
yep.
And, you know, practice squad's interesting because I think all of those guys are intriguing in a way, but you kind of got to balance that group with who can sort of pretend to be a linebacker or pretend to be a safety and be able to grasp all that stuff.
To me, it is, if there's injuries, they want a guy in-house who knows how to go play. So that's why I think Kumaro would be your best bet for a guy that can continue to develop. And if A.J. Green goes down and Brandon LaFell goes down, Jake Kumaro can come up and be a part
and
of
they
guy
know
who
that he'll
contribute as a receiver.
And he knows the offense can run around. That's why I think Simonise might be the odd man out. Cause I really don't know, Paul, if he's shown enough on film where teams are just going to be knocking on his door. And then even if he is signed to a practice squad elsewhere, you know, those guys are free to move whenever and
exactly.
they need to. So that is an excellent point about Jake Kumaro. And I think Alonzo Russell, and I've been on his boat, I guess, since the beginning as a practice squad guy. I think his raw sort of physical traits seem to be, you know, in that group of, you know, it might be worth keeping him around.
Absolutely. Before we move forward, I want to bring in Darren Simmons. You know, we mentioned a lot of him just now, talking about guys you just mentioned, talking a lot about Alex Erickson and Brandon Tate, and kind of hitting on a number of those things. Mike Nugent, it looks like there's not going to be any issue there. Zach Hocker was let go amongst these cuts as well. So let's bring in Darren Simmons here, talking about a number of moves and sort of his view of how some of these cuts have broken down.
The two worst days of the year are the 75 cut down and the 53 cut down. I mean, I hate those 2 days worse than any day of the year. Because, you know, you get to see a lot of guys who worked their butt off for 4 months here, you know, and then I didn't get a chance to be with them, you know, for this last week. And that's the part that sucks, but that's the part of the NFL. You know, they all signed up for it. I did too. So, but it still didn't make it any easier.
You've been in a lot of foxholes with Tate.
I have.
That'd be tough.
You know, I have. And it is tough. It's always tough. Anytime you waive a player, especially with somebody like Brandon, somebody I have a great deal of trust in. It's somebody that I have an immense amount of respect for. I've got a lot of skins with him. We've won a lot of games with Brandon Tate. I've said that since day one, since he's been here, and I still say it to this day. But I'm also excited about what the future holds, too, for the guys we have here, and Alex and Tyler, and we still have what we have in Adam. I think it goes to show you the amount of belief I have in those guys, too. And that's not meant as a retraction from Brandon either. Like I said, I still have an immense amount of respect for Brandon and, you know, he's won a lot of games for us here. I mean, just keep saying that.
Was it more Alex showing you that he can do the things that Brandon did and maybe even a little bit more right now?
Yeah, I think Alex earned a spot, you know. He earned the opportunity for that spot. Not that Brandon lost it, but I think Alex earned that spot. His playmaking ability. I mean, we saw it. I mean, everybody was kind of surprised week one, you know, and you see him. I was too. And then it just kept happening week after week after week, and there's something there. So, you know, I have a great deal of faith in him. I was pissed off at him after the second punt of the game where he's got to come up and make that fair catch in the short run. Again, that's part of those same things I keep preaching about managing the play. He's got to make that play. And I think Hinkie understands that. Not that he didn't understand, but Hinkie understands the importance of it now after I jumped in the middle of his butt.
Yeah, he talked about that after the game the other day. He said he was indecisive. Was he more indecisive in your mind catching it or letting it bounce and not catching it, maybe even on a bounce?
I don't want him to catch it off the bounce. Okay. I want him to catch it in the air because you never know what happens off the bounce. I want to be decisive. I think he got nervous about the height of the kick and where the coverage was. And he's got to be able to sort those two things out, and it becomes a feel. You know, I told him, we're not at Wisconsin. You're not catching those aren't those rugby rollout end-over-end punts that you have to deal with there. These are NFL punts. And an NFL returner has to make that play.
Has to catch it.
Has to. Period. Even if it's a fair catch. Sometimes a fair catch is better than a 20-yard return.
Right.
Because we lost 20 yards on that play.
Right.
Or 18 yards, I think, by the ball rolling. So.
He's by this move, there's a pretty good chance he's going to be standing back there for the first part of the year at MetLife. You feel pretty good about that?
I don't think we would have made the move if we didn't. There's always going to be anxiety that comes with any of that type of stuff. But we did a twofold in one. We wanted to give Brandon the opportunity to try to find another place. You know, we owe that to him. Getting another opportunity to play this week.
You get Erickson return of punts, but you might have Wright and Core. Cody Core looks to be an emerging cover player or somebody to be a core team.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, again, like I said, anytime you get somebody from the receiver position that can cover, you steal a spot. I mean, because they play like safeties, and we're a little, they're like a safety. You know, we had somebody that made first one of it. Here was Kevin Walter was one. Tab Perry was one. Andrew Hawkins to a different degree was one.
What do you think about a core?
You think about core?
Core, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think he fits that same mold.
Yeah.
I just don't know. He doesn't have the same... that's what James Wright did at LSU.
Right.
He was a receiver. He gets hurt. He gets Wally pipped by, Jarvis Landry, and he became a special teams guy. And that's what he did his whole senior year.
Right.
I mean, he had more catches the other night than he had his senior year at LSU. And so there's a lot of evidence of him doing that on tape. There's evidence of that, of Cody Cord doing it. But, I want to see what we're doing against these guys. So, he's a work in progress.
What's your mindset on scrubbing the waiver wire, these last couple of cuts and looking at guys as opposed to having a guy that you've had all through camp? I mean, does there have to be a big, big gap of talent, physical talent?
I think it's twofold. I think if you're you always want to make your, the common phrase, you always want to try to improve your team. I think if they're even, you stay with the guy you got. If there's a big jump, then you have to think of that. I think it also, if you have a void at a certain position because of injury, or because of just a lack of production in the position, I think that comes into play too. But even if so, if now you may have a hole there and you have nobody to compare it against,
right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
If there's nobody there to compare it against,
right.
Yeah, you fill it with whoever you have to sometimes. But I am reluctant sometimes to pull the trigger on some of those things just because you have time spent, you have time on task with those guys. And you can do it with one or two. It's hard to do it with four or five.
Right.
That's why it scares me to death that you go through this claiming period and start claiming a whole bunch of players that, week one becomes a, mishmash, nightmare.
Right.
And that's certainly what you don't want to have.
Who knows how it would have played out. But were you a little disappointed that you weren't able to see Zach?
Yeah, I was. That's the last thing I told Zach is, and again, it's no knock against Zach. But I told him I didn't feel he earned a spot on my team. And I don't think he had a chance to. And it's just because of the injury, because of timing. He's a guy who was kicked really well coming out of spring. And then he gets hurt, and it's hard to get an evaluation on the guy when he doesn't have a whole lot of kicks. So it was kind of the same thing with Brandon. I think Zach is good enough that he deserves an opportunity someplace else. We want to give him that opportunity to go find a spot someplace else. I told Zach, too, that I felt Mike, I have a lot of confidence in Mike. Mike struggled the first couple games, but I also needed to get Mike some kicks in the third game to see if he could rebound and recover from that, which I think he did. And so that was, I'm confident in what I saw in Mike. And that's why we made the decision made on Zach.
All right, so there's Darren Simmons. Now let's move forward. You were talking about running backs before we brought in Darren, so let's kind of hop in there. We'll keep it on the offensive side. So Cedric Pierman in the game against Tampa gets a fracture in his forearm, breaks his forearm. He's going to be out for a while. So that's interesting because that was the most locked down position where it was Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard, Rex Burkhead, and Cedric Pierman were going to be your clear four. Trey Carson and Bronson Hill are two raw kids that I think that they would rather prefer to have one on the practice squad than one actually having to contribute on game day. You have the potential of keeping a fullback. Like Andrew Bonnet is Jeff Luke was let go.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's something that they are really that interested in doing, because they have obviously are short at the tight end position with Eifert. Going to have to be pulling him through. So do you keep a fullback and have Ryan Hewitt essentially sort of move to fullback tight end, more of a tight end role?
Right.
Because you're out there playing Croft and Hewitt and Uzama, and Bonnet would be there for there's a lot of options to see. I think the one that may be one of the most likely is a cut from another team. A running back that could maybe play some special teams, that has some experience in this league playing special teams, coming in to be a fourth guy, because that's what that position is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, and Kyle Kasky said this before, while the coaching staff is high on Hill and Trey Carson, mainly because they see some talent there that needs to be developed. You're right, Paul. I don't think either of those guys are ready to be, you know, on the 53, let alone the active 46, like, you know, Rex Burkhead and Cedric Pierman were. And that's the thing, like, Cedric Pierman, that's a Pro Bowl player that you just lost.
Yes.
And, you know, they hope he can come back. I mean, that'll be determined. We'll know that for sure Saturday if they carry him through the 53 and then put him on IR. But, that's a loss. So, and he's also the up man. You know, so he knew how to block. He knew how to cover on kicks. So there's just a lot there that you're right, Paul. I think a waiver wire, you know, what kind of veteran back that has a pedigree in special teams, I guess. Hill and Carson, they can maybe slide through to the practice squad.
Yeah. So important to talk about this IR designated to return situation.
Yeah.
Because you have Pierman, you have William Jackson III, who both are going to be candidates to be IR designated return. There can only be one.
Yeah.
Only one can actually return, but the options open for anyone.
Right.
The only rules are, A, they have to be a part of your original 53-man roster. You have to carry them through to the 53. And B, they have to spend at least 6 weeks on IR. And at that point, you can bring one person off as your designated person to return. So the question then becomes, you really need to be certain that someone could come back and help you, or else you are sending one of your players that you want on your 53 out to into limbo.
Right.
Even if you tell them you're going to come back,
right,
you're still putting him out there to say, forget it, I'm going somewhere else. And you give them the option to do that rather than keeping them on your 53. So I think the way we're hearing it and the way it looks, we'll find out how serious Pierman's injury is, but I think we're under the assumption that he would have a chance to come back this year.
Right.
You can carry both Pierman and Jackson through as part of your 53. Then after cuts, you pop both of them onto IR, and then you can gauge between the two of them, A, their health, B, the health of the other people at their position as the year goes by.
Right.
If you have a special teams where everyone's hurt and your special team's getting just completely crushed, and maybe even you have some running backs down and Cedric Pierman is healthy, you would bring him back over William Jackson if the cornerback room is okay, and vice versa.
Right.
I mean, if Adam Jones and Drake Kirkpatrick get hurt, guess who's going to be definitely the one to be coming off of that IR designated return whenever he has a shot? William Jackson. So keep a mind on that they're going to have to carry those dudes through, and then they'll tell whoever it is, whether it's a running back that they pick up or whether it is, Shockey Brown or somebody as a corner, tell them, don't go signing with anybody else. As soon as we go and put William on IR, we're going to add you to our 53. So keep that in mind. That's a big part of what's going to happen this weekend with those injured guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be kind of an interesting Saturday, Paul, especially if they determine that Cedric and William Jackson III can come back. Because you're right, they'll have to carry him through and then immediately, so that'll be late, after 4 o'clock's the deadline. you know, so they'll have to maybe wait for other teams to actually release all those guys. You know, we're assuming that a replacement for William Jackson III is currently in this camp, but
might not.
Who's to say? Yeah, who's to say? There's a veteran corner that Kevin Coyle has history with, or Marvin Lewis likes, or I mean, so the end of Saturday could be interesting. Now, granted, we're talking about the back end of the roster, and you're really wondering if these guys can help you. But you know, there've been some big names so far, as your Twitter mentions can attest to.
Oh my goodness! Well, it is that time of year when it's. I mean, I can. The only way I find out who was released is just by looking at my mentions to see who people are asking if the Bengals are going to sign. They can't sign them all,
right?
You know, I did the. I had the mistake of even throwing out an emoji when Paul Kruger was released by the Browns. I did think it was an interesting fit. He's only played in this division. When you talk about he played at Baltimore and Cleveland. Now, he's going to demand a little more money, and I'm assuming that's where the issue is going to come in with the Bengals. It does not look like they're pursuing him. However, I should not have done that. It really set off a bit of a firestorm. Yeah. I just think he would be an interesting fit. It doesn't appear that that's somebody they're pursuing, at least not in the early moments at this point. All right, let's go down the line now. We hit on a couple of the good positions, and I just want to go through here. Quarterbacks, Joe Licata is let go.
Yep.
So Dalton and McCarron will be your two on the roster. Keith Wenning, possibly on the practice squad, or they see somebody else that's cut or released that they want to add to their practice squad in place of Keith Wenning. So we'll keep an eye on that over the weekend. Otherwise, that's set. We talked about running backs. We've got a good feel where that is. I would definitely keep an eye on somebody possibly getting picked up under the running backs. Tight ends in the H-back situation, let's address Tyler Eifert. So here's what we know. We know that nothing has changed to this point. Eifert is meeting with Dr. Anderson in Charlotte, the specialist, this week. I think that's your best chance to get an update. And I'm sure you're sitting there saying, but, Paul, we heard that the update is already out. He is going to return in weeks 4 through 6.
Yeah.
Not so fast. If you'll notice, there were no confirmations from us. There were no confirmations on that report from NFL Network from anyone else.
Right.
I think that was, at the very least, a bit premature to say that, and who knows? He may come back in week 4, 5, or 6. We don't know, but to say something like that, I think before this update, sitting down with Dr. Anderson had happened, the specialist, the number one guy, I don't think anybody was making any calls on where his rehab stands at right now. We will know more soon enough, but he clearly wasn't moved to PUP.
Right.
And I don't expect that to happen.
No.
And so we'll know more, but I do not think that anything at all is set in stone that it won't be until week 4 that Tyler Eifert comes back. I mean, the entire time we've had this same timeline, and week 1, everyone we've talked to has said was still an option at the very least. Maybe it's not going to happen, but it's at least something that they've been aiming for and keeping still in play a little bit. I mean, that's sort of where we're at with it. I just don't think that is as set in stone as people are making it out to be. Just because you see someone who is very reputable report that, those things have been known to be incorrect in the past. So let's not go jumping on one report. Just notice the fact that no one else came out and confirmed that.
Yeah, and then with the other tight end, Tyler Croft, you know, Monday, Labor Day is an important day. He's going to kind of push it a little bit. And then Wednesday, the first full practice before the Jets. You know, so he'll get a better idea Monday. The team will have a better idea Monday. Practice for Wednesday. So, again, he's sort of in that same boat as Tyler Eifert. The hope is ready for September 11th. You know, no one would be shocked if it's week 2 in Pittsburgh. You know, but at least that, you know, he's kind of the under the radar Tyler, right?
Yes.
But he's much, much closer to a return, at least in terms of his workouts and what he's doing on the field. Tyler Eifert, obviously, as you said, Paul, it's that's the hope. But again, I think with the extended week, with the third, you know, for as big of a pain in the butt that the Thursday game is for them on a short week, I think the extra day, if you will, going into New York is going to help the Bengals really get a feel for Eifert Croft, probably Cedric Obwehi and Jake Fisher and all these other guys who, you know, are nursing something. Darquez Dennard, all
yeah,
which is a whole other. I know, you know, not to get too off on that tangent, but back to tight end. So yeah, Tyler Croft should be good to go, at, you know, soon. But that still leaves you with C.J. Uzomah and Ryan Hewitt, right? And really, like you said, Paul, it's like, is Andrew Bonnet somehow in that mix on the 53?
Just because of the situation at tight end. It'd be hard to imagine.
It'd be hard to imagine for me. I think C.J. and I think what we've seen in the preseason where C.J. Uzomah and Ryan Hewitt, I think that's what you see in week one in New York.
Or Croft.
If Tyler Croft's healthy to go. But
Hewitt, I think Hewitt clearly being moved where they're going to be using him more at the tight end position, or he's going to be out there playing almost every snap, either as a tight end or in the H-back position. C.J. Uzomah, boy, for a guy who started hot this camp, has fallen off the map a bit. He has not, and he had, again, another instance where he could not get the timing down with Andy Dalton in Jacksonville, where, you know, he's breaking open in the corner, and you don't know if Uzomah didn't get there or Dalton overthrew it, but this was the same problem we saw when the Vikings came to town, and they couldn't get their timing down to connect in those red zone drills. He has not found a rhythm out there in the passing game, which honestly, Jim, is what surprised me.
Right.
That was where I really thought he would thrive because that was more of his strength. And we just haven't seen – I don't know that he's built up a whole lot of confidence from the coaching staff that he could step in and be a guy that can really fill in.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it, you know, if the Tylers can't go –
he's going to have to go.
He will go, but you're right, though. I'm curious. You know, go figure, right? You're right. They couldn't connect on a passing game, but yet he had that great, in my opinion, you know, he and Clint Bowling had that great block to Springfield Bernard.
Yes.
That's the one part that CJ had had issues with early on was getting out and blocking and doing those things in the right spots. So
you're exactly right. It's the best play he's made all preseason, which is incredibly ironic because that's supposed to be his weakness. But anyway, so obviously not afraid to put him out there, but we'll see where that goes. All right, receivers we touched on, and now in offensive line is interesting.
Yeah,
because of all the players cut, you know, 15 guys had a move made.
Yeah,
the beginning portion of this week, none of them were offensive linemen.
Yeah,
and that to me shows that they don't know what the hell's going on there, and I mean that in a way of. They do, but those last spots are really, really wide open still. I mean, if you can't get rid of anybody, or you just need anybody that can play this game on Thursday, that's really interesting that they're all still hanging around.
Yeah, my first thought, Paul, there is it's more the latter, where they don't want to play Andrew Whitworth at all, Russell Bodine, you know, the two guards, Zeitler Bowling, I think Eric Winston, and you know, if Jake Fisher's still hurt, Obwehi he's still hurt, they don't want Winston out there very long. I think honestly, a lot of these guys got carried through to 53.
Why are we playing this game?
Yeah,
I mean,
honestly,
it's,
yeah.
Why are we playing the fourth preseason game? Why are we playing half of these games? Because you're just trying to figure out guys to keep around.
Yeah.
Just because you don't want to play anybody else. What point is this?
Yeah.
What are we learning?
No, I don't think that. Well, I mean, honestly, they're learning some of these guys won't play again.
To
be serious, there's guys they like. Obviously, you know, T.J. Johnson. I know he's undergoing concussion protocol. We don't have an update on him. You know, if he doesn't play Thursday, that'll I think say a lot, and we'll have to follow up on what's his situation going forward into Saturday. But you know, Trey Hopkins has been around for years. You kind of know what they think of him. Alex Redmond, who hasn't played, the rookie out of UCLA, Paul, I think he's a practice squad candidate, really young. They kind of like him. But all these other guys, Trip Thurman, to me, really struggled at center, even late in the game. Alex Redmond.
Everybody struggled.
Yeah, I think, you know, what did you project? 9 offensive linemen?
I have at 9. I mean, because you've got Whitworth, Zeitler, Bodine, Bowling, Obwehi, Fisher, and then you've got Westerman and Winston. Those are your locks.
Yeah.
TJ,
yeah,
is probably a lock at this point.
I think TJ is a lock, but again, it'd be really curious about this concussion thing, and you know, nowadays, Paul, that's such a wild card. You know, if he really missed the game for a concussion and didn't just go in for a check, you know.
Here's the thing. Let's just talk about week one, okay? If you don't have Obwehi
or Fisher,
that's why they've been trying out these guys like Trip Thurman and Hopkins at tackle the last week or so, because they want to see if these guys can play tackle. And I think we're learning they really can.
No.
At least you certainly don't want them protecting Andy Dalton in a pinch. So if you have T.J. Johnson and he can't play because of a concussion, and you don't have Obwehi and you don't have Jake Fisher, you're carrying six offensive linemen that could even – you have one backup, and that's Christian Westerman for all those positions.
Yeah, which is a scary
proposition. You can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think there's – wow.
That's why they need another guy that can play tackle in a pinch. I mean,
and maybe this is another John Wiedenauer. I don't know, Paul. Honestly,
I don't think he's on this team.
No, you're right. And here's the thing. Other tackles around the league have already gotten hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like and hurt meaning not Cedric Oboye, Jake Fisher hurt, where maybe they'll be back week two, hopefully week one. You know, there aren't any tackles.
No.
So unlike the running back situation where maybe you can make it work or find a guy that kind of get you through, I can't tell you right now, I can't tell our listeners that there's three tackles out on the street that would be better than any of these guys at the back end.
I mean, you can hope that a veteran would get released.
That would be
somebody that was a cap casualty type thing that could come in, like an Eric Winston, who was a veteran, an older guy, maybe someone decided to part ways with, and come in and, in a pinch, play the position for you. They have to have that out there as an option because they don't have anybody else that can go out there if Eric Winston or Andrew Whitworth gets hurt against the Jets, and if you have Obwehi and Fisher still down.
Right.
Yeah. Go out there and do it.
Yeah.
They just don't have it.
No. I think, and I guess this quells some fear, I would, of the two, I would think Cedric is closer to actually being back by week one than Jake Fisher. That's just a gut feeling seeing them walk around and I mean, Cedric from the jump said week one, they really feel he'll be back with that toe. Whereas Fisher, you know, happened a week later. Ankle, you know, he's wearing a knee brace, which is new. So who knows there? But, you know, but you're right, Paul. This offensive line group could kind of jumble up that 53 projection and affect some other positions, you know, depending on how healthy those guys are.
They could keep an extra offensive lineman and make it 10 and cut back on DBs and linebackers.
Right.
Very easily. So under this, with a, you're saying 9, that's 20, 25 on offense. Ideally, you want 25 on offense, 25 on defense, and your 3 specialists.
Right.
So there's your 25 on offense. Let's go over to the defensive side of the ball where it continues to get more complicated. not at defensive line. I think defensive line has pretty much worked itself out.
Yeah.
Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins, Michael Johnson, Domita, Pat Sims, Marcus Hunt, Marcus Hardison. Note on that, we'll be get to back to the second. Will Clark, Deshaun Williams, I think are your 9.
Yeah.
Marcus Hardison suffered an injury in the game against Jacksonville, so we'll wait to see what the severity is on that as well, which could throw some sticks in the spokes a bit.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. You know, we talked to Marcus a little bit. He's hopeful. Honestly, it's really a testing thing at this recording. So, I honestly, that's all we can leave it at. He's hoping it's a tweak. You know, honestly, you're probably not going to see that reported anywhere. But you're right, Paul. That could change things because right now that's 9. And I think if he's hurt, that falls into the whole Pierman.
Right. Now you'd have William Jackson, possibly the third person.
Right. So, you know, which, and then there's Brandon Thompson who will be eligible off PUP later. So, I mean, that's a whole other. And then it's like, okay, can you only go with 8 linemen, D linemen? Do you do that just because of all the other issues at O line, or somewhere else? You know what I mean? So it's It's interesting. The Marcus Hardison thing, definitely one to watch. We'll keep you updated.
He's played so
on
well.
Right.
You know, he, of all those guys that we talked about on the back end of the defensive line roster in our five most pressing questions, we talked about between Marcus Hunt, Marcus Hardison, Deshaun Williams, who is going to take that next step to be part of this rotation?
Yeah.
Marcus Hardison was the clear guy
who
had shown it that he was ready for more time.
Yeah.
And Marcus Hunt has not to this point. And, you know, Will Clark had a game where he looked okay. Deshaun Williams has not been very noticeable.
No.
Whereas last preseason, you were constantly seeing him out there. It was always number 69 in the backfield or chasing quarterbacks around, and you start getting comparisons. This is a little, a mini Geno Atkins.
Right.
Well, we just haven't seen that.
Right.
So that's another interesting turn of events. But
what do you think about What do you think about young Ryan Brown? You know, we started this BBP with Brandon Tate and Alex Erickson, this sort of unknown playmaking undrafted guy. I mean, Ryan Brown hasn't really done a Chris Carter on us from a year ago, where you see 76 in the backfield, but we have seen 76 run second team all camp long.
You're right. You're right.
You know,
6'6", 275. He fits their mold on the defensive end spot. And I mean, he made a couple of plays the other night.
Yeah.
And let's be honest here, he's made more plays this camp than Marcus Hunt has.
Yeah.
And if you are deciding, what did they keep saying? They need to see something from Marcus and Will to show they deserve to be part of a rotation. So if you haven't seen anything from Marcus in particular, but you have seen something from Ryan Brown, I would not be shocked if Paul Gunther said, let's at least give another guy a chance to come in and maybe he can develop if they feel like they've seen something.
Right.
Now, we haven't seen Ryan Brown out there running with the ones.
Right.
We've seen Marcus Hunt out there at the beginning of every game in one nickel, running on the outside. He talked with us on BTS last week about how that first game against Minnesota, he was really dead.
Yeah.
They've been really working him hard.
Yeah.
And he had just come off back-to-back days of those joint practices with Minnesota, which were really tough. And he said by the time the game came around, he was worn out. I think a sneaky number 53 that's sitting out there. And I think that there are still Marcus Hunt supporters in this front office and amongst his coaching staff. But when you see Ryan Brown make a play here and a play there, and he's 6'6", 275, I do think you start to think about it. And there's a reason. Look, there's only two other guys besides those people that we mentioned that are even left here.
Right.
And it's Ryan Brown and David Dean, who's another big old boy up the middle.
Probably the squad candidate for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're right. Under the radar guy to keep an eye on, last year in the game against Indianapolis, G. Little made everybody pay and went off.
Yeah.
And what happened? Greg Little ended up making the darn team. He snuck in a roster spot because he went out there and made plays.
Right.
We've seen there's enough foundation on Ryan Brown out there that if he went out there, because Marcus Hunt's going to play probably a full game again, because they're going to keep wanting to see more from him. And if you see a big day from Ryan Brown, heck, I wouldn't be shocked if they kept
him. It's interesting, Paul, because, again, D-line play, it's not something people watch really on television. You know what I mean? Like, we see sacks. We saw what Geno does to Luke Jokel and that type of stuff. You know what I mean?
Poor
like
Luke Jokel.
Yeah. So Ryan Brown, to me, has done some things that I think D-line coaches would notice, that D-coordinators would notice. Does that mean, you know, Deshaun Williams was in this boat a year ago. He chose to stay here because he thought, you know, there'd be an opportunity here in 2016. You're right. I think, you know what, Paul? Indianapolis, there's no better barometer to me because Indianapolis' offensive line is terrible. It's still bad. Whether they play their starters or not, they're bad.
Even their starters are bad.
So if Marcus Hunt doesn't do anything and Ryan Brown does, you're right. There could be a sneaky changing of the guard. You're right. So my gut says it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm with you.
My gut says it's still Marcus Hunt, and Ryan Brown is a guy that they really lean on to make the practice squad and to keep here. He says he wants to be here. So I think, you know, I think that's what will happen, but you're right. I mean, we always give the BVP listener something.
That's it.
So that could be a sneaky one for you.
70-30, it's Hunt, is where I'm at with that. That's the numbers I'd put on it. But, hey, it's not like he comes from some nothing school. The kid played at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
You know, he was a real player there. All right, so let's move on to linebacker. And you know, the thought is you're going to keep six linebackers, right? Perhaps, oddly, the Pierman special teams loss puts a little more pressure for you to maybe keep seven linebackers to make up for his special teams, because he gave you that versatility at backer where it was just another guy. But typically linebackers are your special teamers.
Right.
Marvin Lewis has talked about keeping extra linebackers in the past, doing it because it's really good for special teams.
That's actually where I'm at. I'm glad you started with that sort of point.
Yeah.
That's where I'm thinking.
Where I think that you could see the linebacker be the one that bumps up. We've talked about a few that could go down. Pick whichever one goes down. Linebacker could go up. And then that would be really the only guys that are left in camp, which is you have Dansby, Vinny Ray, Ray Maluga, Nick Vigil, P.J. Dawson. Vontaze Burfict will go over to suspended, so he won't count. So for the first three games, then you have Trevor Roach and Marquise Flowers. The thought was one of those two is going to have to go. Well, at least until Vontaze Burfict comes back, you keep both, and you have seven, and you have help on special teams to make up for the loss of Cedric Pierman, right?
Yeah, and the special teams there, especially, you know, Flowers is interesting to me, Paul, because I don't know where he fits, though, in the special teams element of this. Because Trevor Roach, clear, I mean, he was up for the playoff game. I mean, he was the first one up after Emmanuel Lemire got hurt a year ago. I don't think he's done anything to, I guess, kick him out of that role. I don't know if, you know, before he got injured in camp, he was running second team in a linebacker. I think Nick Vigil's surpassed him in that regard. But we see Nick Vigil on special teams. And I think P.J. Dawson, you know, I think there's some frustration there that he didn't take a step this camp. But, you know, with Vinny Ray having to play a lot of linebacker the first 3 weeks, you know, P.J. is, you know, your backup Sam to Carlos Dansby. And so Flowers is interesting. I you're right about the linebacker thing because it's another body. It's a big body. I'm not as, you know, we're talking about the back end of the corners here soon. You know, I could see Flowers sticking around for these 3 weeks and them giving him a chance before Burfict gets back.
But I still don't know that he would be active on a game.
Right, if he'd be active. I guess chance meaning practice with...
He would be around, and then if they had an injury in front of him, he would come up and be your special teams guy.
He would be the last linebacker.
He would be the last one in. And then come week four, he would be one of the first ones out. But who knows by week four what position's hurt or what you need, or you know, so it all changes. I think we're both on the same page there. Although full disclosure, we haven't talked about it coming into this.
No.
But I mean, I think we both agree. I think seven linebackers is going to be a part of the way that they cover up the loss to Cedric Pierman, at least potentially.
Right.
The other side of that is, so you have the defensive backs room, is you can go 9 or 10, but do they have 10 defensive backs?
No.
I don't think they have 10 defensive backs on this team that they feel comfortable with.
No.
Because you go Adam Jones, Drake Kirkpatrick, Darquez Denard, Chris Lewis-Harris, and Josh Shaw are going to be your five corners, with Josh Shaw being your swing guy. He can play nickel, and he can play safety. So you're going to have him, and then you're going to have four safeties. So you're going to have George Iloka, Sean Williams, Deron Smith. Clearly they're big three there.
Right.
And then I think Clayton Fedulum, who had that nice game against Detroit that I think helped him out, where he played pretty well on teams. They spent a draft pick on him, which in the past has usually been something they're pretty loyal to. I haven't seen much from Jimmy Wilson, even though he's a veteran guy who has a lot of experience. His experience, I don't know if it's really shown itself. That's going to be an interesting discussion there. So one of those two.
Right.
And then there's Shockey Brown. There's Darius Hillary and Tony McCray. I think those guys are practice squad types.
Yeah.
Is Shockey Brown, I mean, he got Ledecky'd in the opener.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did.
And he's just, he's had his bad moments.
Yeah.
He's just had bad moments out there. But he's had some good moments.
Yeah, he's had a
penalty. He's a real high risk reward,
yeah,
it seems like.
And to me, I mean, again, I'm not a coach. I understand there's a value in games played and veterans. But honestly, Paul, I've seen the guy get beat. He had a pass interference penalty. I don't really take – on one hand, we were talking about it against Jacksonville when they kind of started rotation and 23 was out there early, I guess what you would call like first team or second team. And it's just like Jake Licata coming in before – or Joe Licata coming in before Keith Wenning. Doesn't necessarily mean he's moved up a spot in the depth chart.
It means they're trying to get a look at him.
They're trying to get a look at him. And again, To the same point of Ryan, if I'm going to sit here and talk about Ryan Brown and Alex Erickson, I can't turn around and say Shockey Brown has done anything more than Darius Hillary.
Right.
Or you know what I mean? Or even Clayton Fegel. So mm-hmm. you kind of know what those guys are. Honestly, I think all of those, I think Shockey Brown's a guy who'd be around after week one if you need him.
I think they go with 9 DBs and 7 linebackers.
Yeah, and I think they keep the guys that they drafted or that they've had in the building for a year or even, a year and a half, I guess, when it comes to some of the linebackers, 2 years. So, the Pierman thing's interesting. It's just an interesting ripple effect across the roster because of how good he is on special teams.
Yeah. And the other thing is this Josh Shaw just saved you a roster spot.
Yeah.
You have a fifth corner and you have a fifth safety
right.
in one player.
Right.
So you can now have the luxury of keeping the extra linebacker to help you in case of injury on special teams because of what he brings you. To have 10 defensive backs and Josh Shaw is like having 11.
Right.
So, I think that's where you would want to skim. So our prediction, 9 at DB, 7 at linebacker, including Roach and Flowers, and then your 9 defensive
right.
linemen. That gives you 25. It's 25, 25, and your 3 specialists.
Right. And I guess just, again, giving fans something to watch for, maybe the flip could be Jimmy Wilson for Marquise Flowers or that last linebacker spot, only because Jimmy Wilson has played all 3, like nickel corner. He's played a little bit outside. That was years ago, though. He's played safety. He's got a special teams component. So I guess I obviously agree with you, Paul, but I guess, for fans, if you're listening to this thinking, oh, who could, how could it change? I think that could be a change where they feel, Jimmy Wilson's ability to move around at two, three different spots and being a proven quantity on special teams. I think maybe that could be a change. But I do think it's going to be the numbers we laid out.
And they're still going to have to carry William Jackson through and
right.
bring one of those
exactly.
guys back.
Yeah, yeah. So even Jimmy Wilson could come back, So
there's a possibility that they could pull William Jackson and Pierman through and bring in two guys from
off the street.
From
yeah,
off
exactly.
the street
yeah.
that were left on another team to come take their place
right.
and tell everyone else to take a hike.
Right.
Also a possibility. So we'll see. Again, 4 p.m. on Saturday is the cut. So We'll see where they end up with that. Keep an eye on Cincinnati.com. If you don't have the app, this is the perfect time to get it because we will be once we start learning about guys that are cut and some of the moves that are made, we'll push those out to you so it'll come buzz you right on your phone so you know what's going on with that. We didn't do what made Jim mad because Jim was in a good mood this week. despite everything going wrong around him with all the cuts and everybody, there's lots of things happening. You know why? Because you didn't go to Jacksonville.
That's true.
You got the weekend away.
And you know what I did? I don't know what puppies.
I know. I see that. As if it could be any worse. You not only left me on my own with a Daner gamer down there, where everybody gets hurt.
AJ Green's lipping off the field.
I knew when you weren't coming to Jacksonville, I knew something bad was going to happen. And when Adam Jones gets hurt in pregame, I was cursing your name already. And when A.J. Green gets hurt on the first offensive series, I was so mad at you.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to be. It's not your fault. It's not your fault, but this happens. This is just like it. I mean, every game last year where I was on the game or the game story, having to write the game story on a deadline, stuff went crazy. Stuff went bonkers. That has not gone away this year. I was really hoping for the flip.
Hasn't happened. No.
No. AJ Green's fine, by the way. Yeah. Which we just buried the lead. Just buried the lead in an hour into the podcast. AJ Green and Adam Jones are okay.
Yeah, he looked good in the ping pong game earlier.
He was moving.
Yeah, so
he did lose to Vontez Berfect though.
Yeah,
and Vontez made sure everybody knew about it. yeah, Vontez bought his own paddle. That's
yeah,
how serious guys are getting about the ping pong
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, you know,
it's no joke. All right, so it's time for us to pick our song to go out on here. Final cuts are here. Where do we go when it comes to final cuts?
I prefer, just because I do think of the commercials now, but I am a cliche type of guy.
Ugh.
I am. So what? You know what I'm talking about.
Should I stay or should I go?
No.
No?
Final Countdown.
Oh, you know what?
Europe. I mean, look. Hey, we're shouting out the Swedes. We're going to London. Final Countdown.
Have you... We do love to shout out to the Swedes. It's for our Swedish community here. This is for you, Swedes. I would like to say, have you ever seen the Kazoo-Kalele version of the Final Countdown?
I have not.
Guess what? We're about to play it. So we give the Final Countdown, but in the only the way that we can. This is the special. If you haven't seen this on YouTube, it is amazing. That I think the kid put it out about 10 years ago now. But it still lives on.
It's timeless.
It is timeless. If you haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen. You know what? I haven't seen it, so I'm curious.
Well, now you're going to hear it.
Listen.
We'll listen, but I'll show it to you later.
Yeah.
All right. So, anyway, thanks again for listening. Make sure you check out Cincinnati.com. And remember, September the 6th, Beyond the Stripes, Andy Dalton, Chris Mack.
Get there early.
All hell's going to break loose down there. Pop a shot. Mega showdown. Lots of crap is already being talked about that. September 8th, our special section is going to come out. You're going to want to see that. Lots of good stuff in that, previewing the season. And then, hey, September 11th in New York, we'll be there. Team Inquirer, all five of us will be on site, and we're off. And finally, we can get all this off-season and preseason behind us and start talking about real football. We are looking forward to it. In the meantime, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Swedes. Let's bring in the Kazoo-Kalele. It's the Final Countdown. Have a good one.
Guess there's no